Welcome to Sweet and Twisted, a true crime podcast.
I'm Dawn.
I'm Anita. Be advised, there are trigger warnings in every episode. Each week, we will highlight a missing person so we can bring more awareness to their case. Today, we will be highlighting Jeffrey Lee Stinnett. Jeffrey Lee Stinnett was last seen by his mother on January 15, 1978, but wasn't reported missing until April 19, 1978. He lived in an apartment near the University of Michigan campus, and someone he lived with filed the missing report. The individual stated that Jeff hadn't been seen in about 7 days. He left all his personal belongings behind and hadn't been heard from since. Prior to his disappearance, Jeffrey quit his job and may have been experimenting with LSD. He played tennis in high school, wrote poetry, played Dungeons and Dragons, and was interested in the French language. His sister stated that he was acting strangely when he visited over the Christmas holidays in 1977, so not long before he was last seen by his mother in January. She stated that he said angels had driven him to his mother's home and gave away albums and books he owned, claiming he no longer needed them. His mother speculated he may have joined a religious cult after he disappeared. At the time of his disappearance, he had collar-length brown hair, blue eyes, 5'10" or 5'11", and about 140 to 160 pounds. He's Caucasian with an elongated face skull, small space between two front teeth, and he suffered from a head injury when he was hit by a car in childhood. He also wore a homemade leather belt with flowers and the name Jeff on it. He was 21 years old when he disappeared. Anyone with any information, contact the Ann Arbor Police Department at 734-794-6920, PSS Jamie Giordano with Ann Arbor PD at 734-794-6930, FBI VCAP at 800-634-4097, or submit a tip at vcap@fbi.gov, and that is VCAP. Now on to today's case.
Today I'm covering Carrie Farmer. It gets covered a lot, but people consider it a crazy case. So that's why I wanted to tell you about it.
Well, I've never heard of her, so.
I didn't think so. Okay, in the summer of 2012, Dave Krupa was 34 years old and had recently ended his long-term relationship with the mother of his two children, Amy Florida. Flora. Dave and Amy maintained a friendly relationship for the kids, and Dave would see them regularly. Dave decided to re-enter the dating world. He was new to Omaha, Nebraska. Dave created a dating profile and made it clear that he just wanted a casual relationship. He would connect with a woman named Shanna Goulier, who went by Liz. She was around Dave's age and also had two kids about the same age as Dave's kids. They hit it off, and the relationship became intimate, but he made it clear to her that he was going to see other women and that she should see other men. Liz wasn't interested in that and became very clingy, pushing Dave for more and getting jealous when Dave would go to Amy's to see his kids. She would just show up to Dave's house without warning and would send him long emails about their relationship and wanting to make a commitment. Dave would casually see other women online, but he would meet Carrie Farver in the fall of 2012. She needed some repairs on her car and came into Dave's shop. He was instantly attracted to Carrie and thought that she felt the same. Dave wanted to ask her out, but kept it professional, and Carrie left. Dave couldn't stop thinking about Carrie, but 2 weeks later, he came across her profile on a dating app. He sent her a message, and she wrote him back. She would then stop at his shop, and the two exchanged numbers. Carrie was interested in Dave, too. In fact, she created her dating profile after meeting Dave, hoping that he had one, too, and they could connect.
Oh, that's so sweet. That is. Shy. This shy. Like, oh, please find this.
They had their first date on October 29th, 2012. They met at Applebee's. Dave thought Carrie was smart, funny, and easygoing. Carrie was a software developer for a company that was within walking distance to Dave's apartment. Carrie lived in Macedonia, Iowa. She was 37 years old and had been married and divorced twice. She had a 14-year-old son who she had full custody of. During their date, Dave's phone blew up with calls and texts from Liz. He tried to ignore her, but eventually he called her back. She wanted to pick up her things that she left at his apartment. He told her he was on a date and that it could wait. He went back and the two finished eating, and he asked Carrie if she wanted to come back to his apartment. She agreed, and the two headed to his place. His apartment buzzer started going off. It was Liz saying she needed her stuff now. He tried telling her he would bring it to her later, but she wasn't having it. She refused to leave. Dave explained this situation to Carrie, and she understood, so Dave walked Carrie out, passing Liz on the way. Liz came up and grabbed her stuff, but she wanted to argue. Dave eventually got her to leave, and he called Carrie, and she asked him to come over to her place. Dave agreed and showed up 45 minutes later. The two had the place to themselves and started to kiss. Carrie told Dave she didn't want any kind of commitment and just wanted to have fun. Dave thought he hit the jackpot. The two wanted the same things out of the relationship. He spent the night, and they continued seeing each other over the past couple of weeks. With all the time he was spending with Carrie and the way Liz had been acting, Dave was done with Liz. He told Liz he wanted to break up, but Liz didn't want to let go. Liz had sent him an email saying, "I know you don't know what will happen down the road, but you don't really want to think about it. Are you asking for the long break so you can forget everything? I'm going to give it to you so don't worry. I was just wondering. Sorry. I guess I just need closure. Do I forget everything about us? I'm going to date other people, but if no one catches my eye, do I get to hope time makes the heart grow fonder, or do you want to go and never come back? I'm not saying we will ever get back together. I'm just asking, do I go on and never look back? I guess I hope, even if you're dating others, that you'll look back and smile when you think of me. That someday you'll let me back in, no matter what it might be, a friend or whatever." Dave didn't reply to Liz, so she emailed him the next day saying, "Thanks for not responding to my email. I get the answer. I guess that's it. Later." A few days later, Dave receives a call from Liz saying she left a few pans at his place. When she got there to pick them up, Liz got really flirty, and her and Dave ended up having sex.
Oh, go figure. He thought with the wrong kid. He fucked around with the crazy bitch.
Meanwhile, Carrie had a big project come up at work, so Carrie asked Dave if she could stay at his place for a bit to save her about 2 hours of driving time a day, and Dave agreed. Carrie's son would stay with her mother while she was at Dave's. On November 13th, Dave had to be at work at 6:30 that morning, and when he left, Carrie was sitting on his couch with her laptop. Dave gave her a kiss and said he'd see her later, but he had no way of knowing how dramatically things would change.
Ooh, the plot thickens, and I bet it all tied to that crazy bitch.
Here's a quick outline of Carrie's actions that day. At 6:15, she called into work and left a message with an update about the code she had been working on. At 6:25, she told Dave goodbye as he left for work. At 6:39, Carrie logged in to Facebook on her laptop and saw she received a friend request from Sam Carter from her hometown. She didn't know him, so she messaged him asking, "Do I know you?" She logged off at 6:42. At 9:54 a.m., Carrie's phone logged into Facebook, and she unfriended Dave. 20 minutes later, Carrie texted Dave asking if they should move in together.
What?
Dave thought it was weird because they agreed to keep it casual, and he just texted her no. Seconds later, Carrie sent back a text saying, "Fine, F you, I'm seeing someone else. Don't text me again. I hate you. Go away."
Oh my gosh, she sounds like worse than a freaking high school kid.
So it sounds like Dave's surrounded by a whole bunch of crazy.
Yeah, all wrapped into one freaking body.
Dave has a type.
Yeah.
Okay, Dave was shocked and didn't respond because he was busy at work. By mid-morning, Carrie's supervisor was surprised Carrie hadn't shown up for work yet. They called Carrie and left a message, but they didn't hear anything from her. Dave didn't know what to expect when he returned home. He didn't know if Carrie would be there or not after the strange message she sent him earlier. When he got home, there was no sign of Carrie, and all of her things were gone. It was as if she had never been there. Dave was confused, but thought he had dodged a bullet with Carrie.
How much you want to bet it was, God, I can't think of her name.
Liz?
Yeah, so much shit, Liz. She is the one who sent the crazy-ass text, because that's why I was like, wait, you're saying Carrie. I was thinking you were talking about Liz. I was confused for a moment. Whoops.
In the meantime, Carrie's mom had not heard from Carrie and began to worry. She would talk to Carrie every day. She tried calling Carrie several times to see when she was picking up her son, but Carrie never responded. And when Carrie didn't show up for her half-brother's wedding, her mom really got worried. She knew Carrie wouldn't miss it. Her mom would report Carrie missing. The officer taking the report didn't seem too concerned. Carrie was a grown woman and can do as she pleases.
Well, yeah, but if it's out of character and you know it's out of character, I hate when authorities do shit like that.
Yeah, and it happens a lot.
Assholes. Yeah, I said it.
Dave began receiving angry texts from Carrie's phone. She would say things like, Liz was a fat, ugly whore, along with other nasty things. Liz, too, would begin to receive texts from Carrie, and even her garage was broken into, and someone painted the words, whore from Dave, on the garage wall. Liz also had a checkbook stolen, and she reported both to police. Dave didn't plan on seeing Liz anymore, but he felt bad when she told him about the break-in and the text. He felt guilty for bringing Carrie into their lives. Shortly after, Carrie's mom received a text from Carrie of a picture of a check made out to Carrie from a Shanna Goyer, Liz. The message said that she had sold her bed set to Shanna and asked her mom to let her into the house to pick it up. She didn't believe it was Carrie, so she replied saying, I need to hear your voice so I know it's really you. The only response she got was a text saying she was a controlling bad mother. She reported this to police, but again, they just added it to the file and didn't do much more.
Of course they didn't. I mean, clearly that's out of character for Carrie, and they're just sweeping it under the rug.
Yep.
Bullshit.
Carrie had been diagnosed years earlier with being bipolar, and when Carrie's mother told the police, they chalked it up to the reason for Carrie's disappearance.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
On November 19th, an officer interviewed Carrie's supervisor. They told police that Carrie hadn't showed up for work, and that later in the week they received a text from Carrie saying she was resigning and moving to Kansas for a new job. Police contacted Verizon to get Carrie's cell phone records and her ping locations. The ping showed that her phone was still in Omaha. They drove around the areas of the pings looking for her car, but came up empty-handed.
Oh, shocker.
The police checked the name on the photo of the check, and they talked with Liz. Liz told them about how she and Carrie both dated the same guy, and, well, Dave, and that Carrie had sent her harassing texts and that she had stolen her checkbook. She gave them Dave's contact information, and they stopped in to Dave's work, and he confirmed that both he and Liz were getting threatening, harassing messages from Carrie.
He thought wrong.
Dave hadn't known Carrie was reported missing, and he told police that he would let them know if he saw her. Soon after leaving Dave, the officer himself received a text from Carrie saying, quote, I don't care about this missing person report, but I would really appreciate it if you would leave Dave Krupa out of it. I will be leaving the state. My mother overreacted. I have been to my house a few times. The officer responded saying they would need to speak with her to make sure she was okay. Otherwise, she would remain a missing person in the database. Carrie responded by saying, quote, Dave texted me and said You had the sheriff at his work. Please stop talking to people. I have nothing to say to anyone. I want one person to go away for destroying everything for me. By the end of November, Dave was receiving over 60 texts a day from Carrie's phone.
Jesus!
One night, he got a text saying, I see you in the chair with your feet propped up. You're wearing your blue t-shirt.
Oh, fucking creeper.
Both things were true, and Dave was freaked out. He ran outside to see if he could see Carrie anywhere, but she was not there. He tried blocking her number and email, but she would text and email him from new ones. He changed his number, but she still figured it out, and their harassment would continue.
Oh, my.
Although Dave and Liz hadn't been seeing each other, they began growing closer at the threats and texts from Carrie that they both were receiving. On January 6th, Dave got an email from Carrie with a dark photo of a woman in the trunk of a car with her hands behind her back and duct tape over her mouth. It was hard to make out who the woman in the photo was. The email said, you will do exactly as I say, and then I will let her go. You will dump Liz, and you will start seeing me again. Dave was instructed to call Liz's phone and leave a voicemail, breaking up with her, and then Carrie would set her free. If he didn't do it, she said she would leave Liz in the trunk in a remote location and she will die. Dave wasn't buying it and texted Liz, but she didn't reply until the next morning. When she asked Dave why he was texting her so late, and he told her that psycho was playing games again, just checking on you. Liz replied, so sweet. What's up today, handsome?
Oh my gosh. You're fucking damn bonker. Crazy psychopath. Oh my gosh.
On January 8th, Dave noticed a car in his parking lot that was covered in snow. He scraped some snow off and realized it was Carrie's Ford Explorer.
Holy shit.
He called the police and they impounded the car. A crime scene tech processed the car and found it was very clean. The seats were clean and there were no fingerprints other than one on a mint container. They didn't find a match to the print. And the car was returned to Carrie's mom.
Huh.
Dave and Liz both allowed police to download the contents of of their cell phones so they would have all the evidence. Liz was putting more pressure on Dave for a committed relationship. Though they got along, he didn't like her constant jealousy and pressure. In February, Liz reported two instances of her car being vandalized, and in April, someone scratched whore, stop seeing Dave, into the side of her car.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
In May of 2013, Carrie's son decided to reach out to Carrie. He messaged her on Facebook just saying hi. He got a quick response saying, hey, little man, how are you? Carrie had never called her son little man, but he replied asking Carrie to answer three questions. What is my middle name? What was the name of our first boxer? And who was my best friend when I was growing up?
Oh, smart kid. Yep. Love it.
He didn't receive a response.
Well, of course not. But then there, that's an answer in itself.
Mm-hmm. An email sent in May had a photo of Liz's kids. It looked like it had been taken from outside looking into the window. It said, quote, these are the ugliest kids, just like their whore mom. They should die with their whore mom so I don't have to see their ugliness anymore. Jeez. No one wants her and her bratty kids around.
Jeez, oh Pete.
On May 11th, Carrie sent Dave a link from a remembered.com, or a link from remembered.com, a site for people to post obituaries and memorials to loved ones. It was linked to a page created as a memorial to Liz with the dates June 28, 1975 to May 11th, 2013. The obituary read, I didn't know her well except she was a whore and a man stealer. She kept stealing my man. She is unable to get her own man, so she has to keep taking everyone else's man. Thank God she is gone. Good riddance to you.
What the fuck? Like, her level of insanity knows no bounds.
Yes.
Like, that woman is clearly unhinged.
The next day, Dave got an email saying, "I'm trying to find someone to get rid of that whore Liz for us. You told me before you wanted her gone. I can't do it myself because the cops will figure it out." Liz was terrified, but Dave did what he could to reassure her that Carrie was just trying to scare her. One day, Dave had returned home to find a brick had been thrown through his bedroom window. Carrie sent an email taking responsibility. On another day, Dave found that the words, "Dave loves fat whores," had been scratched on his car. Several times, Dave and Liz would be together, and both would receive texts from Carrie, with Liz's phone being clear across the room. You know, like, she's not even touching it, not even close to it, getting texts from Carrie.
Oh my gosh.
By late summer of 2013, Dave was getting fed up with Liz, and he dumped her yet again.
Oh, that's too funny. I'm sorry, it's too funny.
Soon after, Liz's house had caught on fire. The whole house didn't burn down, but there was a lot of damage. No one was inside the home, but their pets, two dogs, a cat, and a pet snake, all died in the fire.
Aw, that sucks.
The fire was a result of arson.
Well, no shit.
There was a gas can in the living room, a lighter fluid container in the kitchen, and the fire had started in multiple places.
Oh my gosh.
Liz told investigators that it was Carrie. She showed them an email she received that morning saying, "Hope you and your kids burn to death."
What the hell?
Liz called Dave, and he felt bad, so he tried his best to console her. Once again, Carrie managed to bring the two back together.
Oh my gosh.
It is now 2015, and 2 years has passed since Carrie started her threats and harassments. Finally, there was progress in the investigation. Two detectives overheard some talk over the Carrie Farver missing person case and asked if they could get on the case. The deputy who had the case gladly handed his files over to the two.
Of course.
They started with the basic fact that there was two possibilities. Carrie was alive and responsible for the harassment, or she was dead and someone else was pretending to be her.
Well, yeah, let's go with the latter.
One detective took on the side of her being alive to investigate.
Well, of course. And being thorough.
And the other one took the side of her being dead. The detective and the side of her being alive quickly came to the realization that Carrie was dead. No one had seen her in over 2 years. Her car was abandoned. But who would take on the role of pretending she was alive for almost 3 years?
A crazy fuckface.
They closely looked at Dave, but he didn't fit. He had cooperated with the case, and they didn't think he had anything to do with it.
He's just very naive and very gullible. I'm sorry, dipshit.
They did notice one name that came up a lot in the case, and that was Liz Goyer. They looked back at the text sent to Carrie's supervisor saying she was moving to Kansas and was resigning. Well, what I didn't tell you was that her text also mentioned Liz. The text says, quote, "I won't be coming back. I'm taking a job in Kansas. Sorry for the short notice. I am sending someone out to you that can fill the position. Her name is Shanna Goyer."
Oh my gosh, what a coinkadink.
Now, Liz actually filled out the application for the position, but she was not qualified for the job.
Oh my lands. Wow, okay.
So back in 2013, when I told you detectives downloaded Dave and Liz's phone contents for evidence, they decided to recheck Liz's phone and saw Liz appeared to be very obsessive, possessive, and jealous. They also relooked at the photo of the check. Liz had claimed Carrie stole the check, so they looked at Liz's signature and compared it to the check, and it matched.
Of course it did.
They also saw that Liz had made 6 calls to Carrie's home phone 1 week before Carrie disappeared.
Oh, jeez. She's her own worst enemy.
She had blocked her number by dialing *67 when calling. They found a photo of Carrie's Ford Explorer on Liz's phone. It was taken 2 weeks before the missing Explorer showed up in Dave's parking lot.
Oh, another coinkadink. And if only the previous officers, you know, did their due diligence and thoroughly investigated instead of, you know, just sweeping it under the rug.
Yep. Detectives were starting to zero in on Liz, but only had circumstantial evidence. Then they remembered the fingerprint left behind on a mint container in Carrie's car. They compared that print to Liz's, and it was a match. But still, this was circumstantial. More evidence would be gathered throughout 2015.
Oh my gosh, this like goes on forever, it seems like.
Dave had finally gotten fed up with Liz.
Again. Again. Millionth time.
They were supposed to spend Thanksgiving together, but he got an urgent phone call from Amy, his ex, that morning. Her baby, which wasn't Dave's, had gotten sick, and there had been a blizzard, and Amy was scared to drive, so she called Dave to ask him to drive them. Liz was angry that Dave would go help his ex, and Dave was done. He told her they were over for good this time. One day, Dave noticed his gun had been stolen.
Oh, shit.
By December, the two detectives were sure Liz was responsible for Carrie's disappearance and all the threats and harassments. They needed to talk to Liz, but didn't want her to think they were suspecting her. On December 4th, they were surprised to see Liz walking down the hallway. She came in to file a harassment report against Amy.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
Dave's ex.
Oh my gosh.
She said that Amy was the ex of a guy she had been seeing, and that she had been stalking her on Facebook. She was scared because Dave's gun had been stolen, and she believed Amy was the one who took it.
Oh, my land.
He asked Liz if he could download the contents of her phone for evidence of all the harassing texts. Liz agreed.
She's her own worst enemy.
Now, there are two ways they can go about downloading a phone's contents. There's the simple download, which is what they did the first time with Liz's phone for the texts and emails. The more thorough download, which they did this round, basically making a duplicate of everything on her phone. They would have access to her files, photos, text, email, and also recovered data that had been deleted.
Huh. Yep, she's her own worst enemy.
The following night, Liz drove out to Big Lake Park to do some thinking. But at 6:41 p.m., Liz called 911 saying that she was shot in the leg by Amy Flora.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
Liz and Amy came up to her. Liz said Amy came up to her and said, "So you like effing Dave." Then she shot her and ran away.
Oh my gosh.
They took her to the hospital and searched the park, but wasn't able to find anything.
Of course not.
Amy was sitting on her couch when someone started pounding on her door. Three officers were standing there, guns drawn. She was scared and started crying.
Well, I would have too. I mean, shit, you have, you know, officers come beating on your door because, I mean, hell, they're not, you know, gentle when they're beating on your door.
Yeah.
And guns drawn. Yeah, I'm like, what the fuck is going on?
After questioning her, they believed her story that she had been sitting at home for the last hour playing games while her baby slept. They checked her car and found the engine was cold and hadn't been driven recently. They asked her to do a polygraph test, which she agreed, but she failed that test. But we all know that polygraphs are not reliable.
Well, yeah, that's what I was just getting ready to say. We know they're not reliable because how someone can just be a nervous person and and then fail everything. You could ask them what their name is and they could fail. You could ask if the sky is blue and they'll be like, no, and you're looking out there, okay, it is blue. So
the two detectives were fairly certain that Liz had shot herself in the leg. The bullet passed through Liz's thigh and missed the bone and major arteries. She was released from the hospital a couple days later.
There would be gun, you know, powder and stuff residue on her hand.
Meanwhile, detectives were diving deep into searching Liz's phone and found that she had been using an app called Texty, which allows you to schedule messages to be sent at a later time. They recovered all of the deleted data and found that she had sent thousands of texts. In all, there were over 20,000 emails and texts.
Oh my gosh.
This, too, was all circumstantial evidence. They needed more, so he tried to trick Liz into giving them more.
Well, she's her own worst enemy, so, I mean, why not?
Well, listen. They called her in to discuss building a case against Amy for her shooting. They told her this needed to stay quiet, but they thought maybe Amy had something to do with Carrie disappearing.
Oh, fuck.
But they told Liz they really needed evidence. 4 days later, Liz received an email from Amy with the title, "I shot you."
Oh, my God.
It had said that Amy shot Liz to keep her away from Dave. Liz gave this to police, but said they wished they had evidence to connect Amy to Carrie's case. They told Liz that remains had been found that could be Carrie's, but that was the only info Liz would get.
Mmm. Yeah, they're good. But she's also her own worst enemy. She's a dumbass.
Wouldn't you know it, Liz got another email a couple days later.
How convenient. Of course she did.
It was from Amy confessing to killing Carrie.
Oh, bullshit.
It claimed that Amy stabbed Carrie in the stomach and burned her body. Also claimed to be sending the text and emails.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, she's just digging her own grave further and further.
They believed that Carrie was killed in her car, but the car had been sold. They tracked down the car and got permission to search the car from the new owners. They took the seat covers off and found a large red stain in the cushion of the passenger seat. Someone had clearly bled a lot in that seat.
Aww.
They tested the blood in the car, and it was a match to Carrie. Even though the detectives told Liz to keep what they talked about private, she told Dave, and Dave called the investigators.
Of course she did.
They were trying to say Liz was responsible for it all, and that Dave should avoid Liz at all costs. Dave had always thought it was Carrie doing it all. They mentioned that Amy may be in danger and that Dave should move in to keep Amy safe. Dave told Amy about what Liz did, and all Amy said was, "Told you so."
Of course she did. I like her.
Liz became upset when Dave moved in with Amy, saying, quote, "Looks like the only person who benefited was her. So she gets to shoot somebody, and then she gets to kill another person, and then she gets to move in with Dave and be free, and you guys aren't arresting her." They had to reassure her that it takes time to build a case. Little did she know, the case was being built against her.
It's karma. Karma at its finest. Especially dealt to that crazy bitch. Man.
On February 25th, 2016, investigators were granted a search warrant on Liz's apartment. Police waited for her to be at work so she couldn't delete any digital evidence. They collected a camera and a camcorder, which were proven to belong to Carrie.
Oh, gosh.
They arrested Liz that afternoon on an outstanding traffic violation. They told her about all the evidence they had, but she denied it all, and her lawyer got her traffic violation taken care of, and Liz was released.
Holy shit.
10 long months later, they were finally able to arrest Liz for the murder of Carrie Farber. The DA was skeptical, but successfully prosecuting Liz without a body or a murder weapon. Finally, they agreed to move forward, and Liz was arrested for Carrie's murder on December 22, 2016. They asked Dave if there were any electronic devices they may have missed, and Dave remembered her tablet that was in the storage. The tablet had an SD card, and the SD card had photos. The one photo had a foot with a tattoo on it. They got a photo from Carrie's mom that showed that tattoo matched one that Carrie had on her foot.
Oh, shit. Again, see? She's her own worst enemy.
The photo of the foot was shown to a pathologist, and they concluded the foot was in a state of decay.
Oh, damn.
The trial began in May of 2017. The state called 32 witnesses to make their case. Liz's defense didn't call any witnesses. But in the end, the judge was convinced. On May 24th, Liz was found guilty of first-degree murder and second-degree arson. Liz tried to take a plea deal, but first of all, no plea deal was offered. And second, The time to accept a plea deal is before you're convicted of murder.
Yeah, no shit.
Not after.
Yeah.
Liz was sentenced to life in prison for the murder and 18 to 20 years for the arson, set to run consecutively.
Well, good. Honestly, I mean, this woman is clearly unhinged. I mean, she really needs some mental help. Mm-hmm. And I mean, and with that, I'm not making fun of anyone that has mental issues, but this woman clearly goes above and beyond. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, way bonkers.
Good thing about her sentence, though, if somehow she gets the life, you know, overturned or whatever, she still has 18 to 20 years she has to serve.
Nice. So she's going to be in there for a little while, which should be. She honestly, I don't think it would be right nor fair, especially how long she made this go on. God, that bitch is psycho. Yeah.
And I couldn't find anything about them saying they ever found Carrie's body or anything, so I don't think they ever found her.
Oh, wow, that's crazy. That's still so unfortunate.
Yep.
Like, to start dating someone thinking, and because he's tied to a crazy bitch, and then all shit goes downhill. Like, wow. That's sad. Sad and unfortunate.
Yep.
So be wary who you date. I have a did you hear? A former Catholic priest pleads guilty to a felony obscenity charge for filming his naughty time with not one, but two dominatrixes on the church's altar.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah. Yeah, he had a kink for sure. He had himself a threesome. Disgraced former priest Travis Clark received a 3-year suspended prison sentence, 3 years of supervised probation, and a $1,000 fine. He got busted, all because a nosy peeper was passing the church and saw lights on and decided the best course of action to take would be to peep through the windows instead of calling authorities. Well, the peepster saw Clark half naked engaging in risque romp with the two women. The women were in corsets and high-heeled boots atop the altar. When the police arrived, they discovered a tripod-mounted camera, which recorded the porn-like encounter, and sex toys galore, and stage lighting. Yep, they were definitely making a porn. I bet they were going to call it the Unholy Trinity. Lesson gathered. If you want to spice up your sex life, make sure you can't be seen by any outside peepers. Heck, that's why you're recording it. That's all I got for the did you hear. Thank you for listening to our podcast. We hope you join us every Friday for more episodes.
You can find us on Facebook at Sweet and Twisted True Crime, on Instagram at Sweet and Twisted Pod, or you can email us at sweetandtwistedpod@gmail.com.
Until next time,
keep it sweet,
but slightly twisted.
Bye.
Toodles.